pinky, using his pinky and a few other fingers as well, in the Rondo for Violin and Strings by Schubert.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for listening to this beautiful classical programming. If talk programming of a different nature is something that might suit you, let me suggest some great opportunities for that here at 89.3 FM. Friday mornings from 10 until 11 a.m., it's the new WHFR Journal, hosted by Mr. Jay Koronick and sometimes special guest hosts, and you will find an opportunity there to hear the latest of what's going on here in Dearborn, in the community, some local news and views that you just don't want to miss. Also, Saturday mornings, 10 until 11, it's a show we call The Forum. Every week, it's a different opportunity to learn about different subjects. We have Metaphysically Speaking, Pet Lover's Lane, We Are Not Alone, and Then and Now. Great opportunities to learn a variety of bits of information that you just won't hear anywhere else. It's talk programming at its best right here on 89.3 FM.
Good morning, I'm Allison Young.
Good morning, Allison. That was Allison Young from Public Radio International. She is so quick. She is alive at this very moment, of course, in St. Paul, Minnesota. We get classical music from Public Radio International. Thank you, loyal listeners to our classical shows, for providing the money it takes to pay for that syndicated program. This is WHFR Dearborn. If it's Friday morning and if it's 10 a.m., just turned as I'm watching the clock, it must be our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. Morning. This is another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and views here on WHFR.FM. We're making waves with the kind of programming you just can't get anywhere else on your dial here in the Detroit area. Good morning. My name is Jay Koronick. And yes, it's our pre-election special today. We're going to be covering a number of issues, as we did last week, that are on the ballots and the latest twists and turns and newspaper endorsements for candidates in Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and some of the surrounding areas, too, as well as some special endorsements. Kind of interesting that some of these things have cropped up in the last week. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that one. Right now in the studio with me, though, we have a special guest from the Counseling Division at our college. In fact, we have the Associate Dean, Diane Green, with me this morning. Diane, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. We, Diane and I have worked together for many years here, and we won't say how many. but Diane has helped in particular the fine arts area with advice and counseling and scheduling issues and helping students in all kinds of ways. And now she has been, and I'm sorry I didn't realize this until you told me a few moments ago, has been elected by your peers to be the head of the counseling area, the associate dean, as they're calling him now, formerly division director or something like that, right?
That is true. Mm-hmm. Jerry Oshesky, who had been our fearless leader for 27 years, decided to come back into the ranks, and my colleagues elected me as the new associate dean over counseling, but I'm also over the assisted learning services program and focus on women.
Okay, yeah.
So they're all got a big hat.
Yes. Yeah, and it's so big she can't even wear it right now in the studio.
It feels heavy.
That's right. But we've always had, and most people, when they think of counseling at a college, They know that if they come here as a student, they can get advice on what might be an appropriate program for them to study. And of course, if they need help and assistance during the course of those classes, they can see counselors about that, and as well as the admissions office and other people that relate, the registrar's
That's
office
correct.
That relate to those things.
Yeah.
But I think our counseling program, and maybe similar to others, but I think we have a wide range of special services and opportunities for students that go beyond just the one-on-one academic and personal counseling, such as we offer courses and an upcoming seminar or workshop, if you will, that you especially want to talk about today because it's coming up a week from this coming Wednesday. So
exactly.
It's only about 10
yeah.
days away or so.
Yeah.
But tell me about how counseling, and it was many years ago, we've done this for a long time, but counseling actually teaches classes.
We do. We have an extensive offering of classes and have historically, during my 33 years here at the college, have offered a wide variety of courses to assist students in making career decisions as well as dealing with personal life issues through a course setting. Perhaps our key course in terms of career development, career exploration, is our Counseling 120, which is a one-credit hour class, career exploration. I always say to students, it has a beginning, it has an end, but it's not magic. The students actually come in, they take a variety of assessments that range from interest inventories to abilities tests. They have an opportunity to explore software career programs through our Career Resource Center as a part of that course. And at the end, we hope that students come out with the necessary information to help them in making that decision about what do I want to be when I grow up. And the reason I always tell them it's not magic is because a lot of students come in totally undecided. So I'm thoroughly pleased, as are other counselors who teach the course, that at the end of that class, they can hone in on a broad area. Other students who come in who have honed in on the area use the course to fine-tune that into identifying specific occupational areas they want to pursue. We have a wonderful course in life work planning, which gives, and it's a great class because what it does is it really helps individuals to understand that there's a real linkage between life and work. It's very difficult to separate our own personal lives from our work. And I'm sure you experience that every day. When you hit the door at home, you still have the briefcase in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one of our key courses. We have a course in stress management. Which is very, very important to individuals, not only as students, but
how,
as
how to manage the stress of taking these classes.
Exactly.
Yeah, too. I
exactly.
mean, it's part of the stress, but it's interesting. This class will not give you that much stress by itself. Okay, it's tools to get beyond that. I wanted to mention just briefly from my own experience. I know from a long time ago, it used to be that at least in my high school counselors would start with us early on, the first year of high school, to look at jobs and careers, and everybody had these aptitude tests and other kinds of tests. I mean, psychological profiling tests, and as well as skills tests and knowledge tests that would help see what directions would be easy for you anyway, or easier than other careers. And even what was amazing to me was a test I took in senior high school, in the senior year of high school, that actually, even though my skill areas were in science and math, real strong science, math, chemistry, physics, fantastic, I wouldn't have enjoyed those careers.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, I thought I would. I didn't know enough about the careers, but the psychological profile indicated I want to work with people more, like a teacher would. And thank goodness, and in fact, even in taking the test, I realized the direction my answers were going. I didn't even need the counselor to tell me what the result was. I said, oh, my gosh.
It was there in front
happy.
Of you.
Yeah, but you need that kind of help. And that's not happening quite as much in high school, counseling.
That's
not putting
true.
Down the problems of being a great counselor in high school, but the career-oriented part and the intensive, well, again, I think it was like an hour a month with a counselor required to talk about future careers from the ninth grade on. And they just don't seem to have the time enough to do that, or maybe fewer counselors in many high schools today. And again, we're not saying that, that's not good. If people are doing that, it's wonderful. But I know my daughter got very little counseling in that regard, and it was right here in Dearborn that she went through.
I think, unfortunately, counselors in the high school setting are inundated with the kinds of responsibilities that are really not counselor-oriented. They deal with discipline. They deal with attendance, those kinds of issues, which really take away the kind of time that they would, I'm sure, love to be spending with their students and dealing with the issues of careers and looking at outcomes from the various assessments that, students take and helping them to at least begin to make some decisions about direction.
So the classes offered by the counseling department, and you mentioned, I think, two or three titles, but there's maybe six or more.
Oh, there are many more. We have courses in assertiveness training. We have a human potential course that really helps students to deal more with the personal self in terms of values and personal motivation. A few years back, and perhaps it's longer than a few years now, the time seems to fly, we launched a course in conjunction with the English department, College 101 College Success. I am the keeper of the course, if you will, but we still team teach it for most of the sections, with the counseling division teaching the college environment side of the class and the reading faculty on the English side teaching the study skills. What people oftentimes don't realize is when students encounter difficulty in college, it's not always directly related to their inability to be a successful student academically. What is the barrier point for so many students are the personal issues. We deal with an older student population, a commuting student population, a working student population, and with all of that, individuals are juggling numerous balls. So if they end up having to drop a class, or sometimes they even disappear from a class, oftentimes that's associated with something that's going on in their personal life and not necessarily their ability to be successful in the class.
Now, of course, your counselors one-on-one will talk to and work with students enrolled here about those issues, too. But if they really want to develop certain skills or new attitudes or get some ideas in you know, a bigger plan, then taking one of the classes you offer would be a good way to do it. These classes are academic classes, and the credits, do they count towards our 60-hour
degree? Yes, they do. All of the courses are numbered at the 100 level or higher. Some of the classes, in fact, transfer. The College 101 transfers to seven universities and colleges in the state. There are a number of schools that take our career exploration class. If they, in fact, offer a class, they take our class.
It has to be something comparable.
Exactly.
But even as an elective class, it's only an hour out of 60 or a couple of hours out of 60. And the self-improvement, self-enrichment, personal enrichment aspects can really be amazing. It can make an amazing difference for a lot of students that hadn't had a chance to, like, formally, consciously sit down and consider some of these things.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Plus, the interaction I just thought of in the classroom between them and other people who have similar problems.
Most definitely. The credit counts towards the associates here, but your point is very well taken. I'm a firm believer that when the student's total foundation academically and personally is grounded, students thrive and students are successful. So we feel very privileged to be able to offer students the kinds of courses that are going to help them be successful and deal effectively with life barriers.
We're talking this morning for the first part of the new WHFR Journal with Diane Green, who's the new Associate Dean of the counseling area, including special needs and also focus on women, if I'm correct about that, yes. And also, of course, a counselor for many, many years working in the trenches, if you will. They still have trenches over there? No, they have nice little desks. and
sometimes it
offices,
feels like trenches.
But, and you're out and about doing a lot of things besides the credit classes, which are just, you know, an hour or two, but still really special because they're focused on individual improvements and so in life enrichment. You do things that don't cost anything but don't have any credit either. And I've heard of this one before. This is coming up again Wednesday, November 14th, Non-Traditional Careers for Women. So talk about the content of that. It's going to be basically 8:30 in the morning to 1 p.m. in the afternoon. And, gee, it includes breakfast and lunch, no charge, and a lot of distinguished speakers and faculty from the college and graduate and so on. But how did this come about? And explain what's meant by non-traditional careers for women.
I was sitting in my office very early on in my undertaking of this great new challenge, and I was thinking about what could we possibly do to better facilitate students coming into the college and supporting students who were already here in terms of helping them to become more aware of the various careers available to them and what programs specifically at the college would support that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Perkins-funded event. Perkins deals with programming for individuals who are moving into what we call CTE programs, career and technical education programs. And what I wanted to see us focus on was looking at non-traditional careers for women, we do that one in the fall, and non-traditional careers for men, which we conduct in the spring.
I remember one of those, and that's everybody thinks nursing is only for women, but in fact, it's I think a large percentage now. Maybe it's less a hidden secret of nurses are men.
Exactly.
But
and
the
for
men,
crop
is also true here, and that's what we're talking about right
yes,
now for women.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So nursing, for example, would truly be a non-traditional career for men because traditionally nurses have been women. Likewise, careers in automotive technology, management, productivity systems, energy tech, industrial drafting, CAD, electrical technology, architecture are all non-traditional careers for women.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the areas that we will be focusing in on for our seminar, which we entitle Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women. And as you've indicated, we will be holding that on Wednesday, November the 14th.
And it's going to be where?
In the Ghaffari Conference Room in the Technical Building.
Right.
The other neat thing about...
Right here on the main campus, folks... Evergreen Road to south of Ford Road.
That's
Henry Ford Community College, of course. Yes.
And we're doing it in the technical facility so that as we do the breakout sessions, the sessions are about a half an hour each, the students are actually taken into the working labs for each of these occupations. The lead teachers will be speaking with them, talking to them about what they would experience in this particular program, what kinds of jobs they would be qualified to pursue, what kind of pay they would be looking at. Hopefully, some of the instructors may have some female students who will be assisting them that can talk about their experience in these particular areas. We do have a special presenter at the noon hour lunch period. Who is a graduate of Henry Ford Community College at Lawrence Tech. I'm going to let her name be a surprise.
Okay.
But she will be coming in to share her experience as a non-traditional student in a typically male-oriented area of work. So we're really, really excited about it. We're giving away wonderful prizes.
Oh, my God. Free food and prizes, too.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Perkins Grant, anyway, for doing that. Yes. It's not folks that we're bribing people here, but certainly in Michigan, we know that we need highly skilled people. There are highly skilled jobs that where there are openings for people, opportunities, but unfortunately, either people have not been able to get the right education, although they could do that here at Henry Ford, right? Because we have these programs in the tech building.
That's correct.
But on top of that, they shouldn't eliminate, as you say here in the sort of the heading, the subtitle, Imagine the Possibilities. You should look at all your options, and there's nothing wrong with these non-traditional jobs. I mean, it's not, some people might think, well, there might be sexism. Is that true anymore? Is there notice? I mean, there's sexism, just like racism, unfortunately, in our society.
Of course, which is, yes.
Yeah, we're always, we should be
absolutely
concerned about that and trying to overcome that. But in fact, I think if people are qualified, they're qualified.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And of course, if men want to come and hear about these programs, they're perfectly welcome.
There you
but
go.
But again, uh-huh. it's you know, emphasizing areas that women traditionally have not pursued. And the other thing that we focus on here this morning is individuals can register, they can pre-register by calling Brenda Buchanan at 313-845-9617, or you can just show up that morning. You don't have to stay for the entire day. The sessions are broken out on a half an hour basis.
Oh, okay.
We will have information that will be distributed about campus where individuals can, in fact, view the times that each of the groups will be meeting. And it's not just targeted for students who are already at Henry Ford. Students who are undecided, who are currently enrolled, are definitely invited. But we're reaching out to the community as we see more and more men and women are losing their jobs because of downsizing with companies. We're inviting them to come in and take an opportunity to look at what we have to offer them here at Henry Ford Community College.
Well, that's a great opportunity. Now, this has been popular. This is not the first year you've done the non-traditional careers for women, is it?
This is our second year.
Second year. Okay, well, there
yes.
you go. They've got a proven track record of success.
That's
for
this. Right.
and it's wonderful. So automotive technology, electrical technology, industrial drafting, manufacturing processes, architectural construction, and there's areas and jobs related to these within those topics that will be talked about, too, that will give people ideas. It's in the Henry Ford Community College Technical Building, Patterson Technical, next a week from Wednesday, November 14th, okay? And
we begin at 8:30. Registration
right.
starts
mm-hmm.
at 8:30.
Yep. Yeah, don't miss the breakfast, folks. Okay. Well, Diane, this is always exciting, and just, you know, Keep us informed here at WHFR. We have, as you can see, my copy stand here, all kinds of announcements about college activities, and we love to share them with our listeners. And can't get better than a free event. And we hope that people will consider coming on by. And we didn't have time this morning, but come on back sometime, and either you or other people in your areas can talk about the special needs program and our focus on women program, which is also unique and multifaceted, if
yes.
I may say,
and
just
Peggy
like a jewel.
Peggy Holcomb does a fabulous
right.
job with
sure.
that program.
And we've talked to Peggy before, but so keep up the great work. We're especially trying to get your attention, folks, about the non-traditional careers for women. It's a seminar, a special program on Wednesday morning, a week from this Wednesday, November 14th, here at Henry Ford Community College. Either call the counseling department in general, or you gave out Betty Buchanan's name and 313-845-96717. I'll keep a flyer here on our copy stand.
Great. Thank
right.
you so much. And thank you for having me this
morning.
Well,
thank you for coming on by. The new WHFR Journal, we're going to take a break for non-commercial messages, so listen on up here, and I'll be back with our pre-election summary and endorsements from some local folks.
Please join us for a WHFR benefit on Saturday, November the 10th, from 9:30 p.m. until 1:30 a.m. at the New Place Lounge. That's located on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. We will be featuring the live blues music of the Carl Cavallero Band. Howard Glazer and the EL34s.
I got the blues every day, and I got the blues all night long.
And Lady T. If you are over 21, a $5 donation at the door lets you in for all of the fun. Food and beverages will be available for purchase. That's Saturday, November the 10th. a benefit for WHFR at the New Place Lounge on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. Have a good time, hear some great blues, and support WHFR, making waves since 1985.
Hey, this is the Gothabilly Man, this week on The Wrecking Hours.
A live radio show way down south launched the rock and roll revolution and coined the phrase, Elvis has left the building. Please join me, Rosie Flores, for the little-known story of the Louisiana Hayride on Whole Lotta Shakin' from PRI, Public Radio International.
That's Monday on The Wrecking Hours, 4 to 6 p.m. right here on the station Making Waves, 89.3 FM, WHFR, Dearborn.
Non-commercial messages are over. Whole Lotta Shakin' is part of the special syndicated show from Public Radio International, part of our Rockabilly show on Monday afternoons. Hope you get a chance to catch that for another, I think, 6 weeks or whatever, from 4 to 5 o'clock. And New Place Lounge benefit, well, that's one of those things that's just a very selfish, personal kind of reason that we have to mention that, and that is that we need money to continue our operation. Henry Ford Community College gives us a secure, small amount each year, the same as the other sponsored activities in music and theater and college newspaper and so on. Just like the real world, which we are in as we broadcast, we have to raise about 60-70% ourselves. And that's why we have one pledge drive each year, and thank you for contributing last year. And along the way, though, we need to supplement that and also try to find ways that people can have a good time. So we got those three great blues artists that they're donating their time for free to give us great entertainment a week from this Saturday night. Okay, November 10th. Starting at 9:30 p.m., this is on West Dearborn at a venue called the New Place Lounge, and it's not far from ACO Hardware. But it's right next to Michigan Avenue. But its entrance, I'm told, is actually from the parking lot the other side. So you just see a window and a small sign at Michigan. But New Place Lounge, West Dearborn, near the ACO Hardware place, just park in that lot. It's a $5 donation at the door, and then all of it will go to WHFR. In fact, we just had to replace our two main CD players here in the studio. And because they have to be on constantly, day and night, that would destroy a standard CD player rather quickly. We have to have some professional models here. So it costs us $600 for these two CD players. They also have to play MP3s, CDRs, CDRW, because we get CDs in all formats from the artists who are struggling to get attention, some of them burning their own CDs in their basement, so we have to have something that can play all that. So we're hoping to make up for the cost of the CD players that we already had to buy, and Jay is hoping to get reimbursed for that somehow, someday. So, but it's going to be a great time. We had a similar blues event at New Place Lounge last March, and everybody had a great time. Alcoholic beverages available and food, too, if you wanted to buy that. But three big-time, high-quality local blues artists. So it's Saturday night, a week from tomorrow, November 10th, at New Place Lounge in the west side of Dearborn. Okay, getting back to local news, I want to thank Diane Green for coming by from the counseling department here at HFCC, and we're going to be mentioning more about their special offerings to the community to get you on track for this highly competitive world out there. Yep. Well, this is a national issue, but it was even covered on National Public Radio this morning. Stephen Colbert's presidential bid has ended after a no in South Carolina. Now, if you don't know about Stephen Colbert, he is a host of a commentary show, which is, in fact, satire. And Mondays or Thursday nights on Comedy Central cable channel, he does something that he calls the Colbert Report. And it features him, but he's doing satire, folks. He's sort of, I think, satirizing Bill O'Reilly. Very intelligent guy and very insightful humor, even more so than Jon Stewart, who tries to play it straight most of the time. I mean straighter, but just making jokes about events, political events, especially in our society. And Colbert was turned down by the Democratic Party of South Carolina. They voted 13-3 against certifying him. They didn't feel that he was a viable nationwide candidate. Interestingly, he has something like over a million supporters registered on a website the day after he announced, about 2 weeks ago, that he was running for president. So there's no doubt that somebody that has name recognition in the media and fans, these fans can turn into voters. But the Democratic Party, again, he's doing it as part in his persona, if you will, in his job as a satirist, as a comedian doing a fake news show. And so that's not serious. I mean, you can't be a president and be doing satire all the time, can you? Well, I think it makes a lot of interesting points. I thought it was amazing that the vote of the Democratic Party Council in South Carolina voted 13-3 against certifying him, but there were three people that felt his name should be on the ballot. Three out of the 13. Hey, what does that tell you about the political process? Although, I think ultimately my comment here, and it is one locally too, you can't get on the primary ballot unless the party certifies you. You can't just say you're a Democrat. Now, that's the primary. It seems to me, folks, that, and primaries usually lead to who's on the final, you know, big election ballot. But in terms of the primary, the parties have total power here. They don't want your name representing their party. They can keep you off. But what if you are a Democrat? But they won't let you get your name on the ballot. So I just wonder if he's going to get any write-ins. Can there be write-ins for the Democratic side of the presidential primary? I bet you can't. And so my ultimate comment here is consider how undemocratic our elections are in terms of keeping people who want to run for offices off the ballot, whether it's a petition drive. I mean, I understand the residency requirements. Stephen Colbert was born in South Carolina, but it doesn't matter where you live in the U.S. if you want to run for president, but you have to be on the ballot in a lot of states in order to get any significant number of votes and have hope of winning. But I will say that personally, I know that Stephen Colbert, outside of his persona, is an extremely intelligent guy. He's very quick-witted. He doesn't need writers to make jokes about people and things. He is very insightful. He's got, I'd say, he's got one of those laser beam type minds that cuts through all the you know what and gets down to the core of issues. So I don't know if I ever want to see him forced to be serious, because there's so much to laugh at in this world and point fun at so that we can get attention to it and then change it. Yeah. If we're aware of something that's ridiculous and idiotic, then we can make an effort to change it. Yep. So. But Stephen Colbert, it looks like his campaign is ended. Okay, looking in the local news. Okay, something else coming up on campus I see here. The newspapers are getting in the home stretch before the election, although a lot of people in Dearborn who get absentee ballots, if they request that and they're over age, I think it's over the age of 60, they can get a ballot sent to them, even if they're in town, even if they're not immobile. Okay, even if they don't have a job conflict that keeps them from the polls, which are open at 7 a.m. and goes to 8 p.m. at night, 13 hours, next Tuesday, November 7th. I certainly hope, if not suggest, plead, demand, that if you're registered in whatever community, you should go to vote on November 7th. If you don't know what the issues are or who's running, find out. Okay, get to the polls a little early. Read your local papers. You're listening to the radio now. I assume you know that newspapers exist, and they are the perfect supplement for this kind of information to, well, this radio show, of course. So I'm looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, October 31st. Today is the 2nd of November. Did I mention that before? Very exciting. We're in November here. And the point of view of the Press and Guide, you know that they did already suggest, both papers, in fact, the Press and Guide and the Times-Herald have already suggested and endorsed that the Charter Commission revisions be approved. That they do not believe that there will be a doubling of taxes. That's not even possible within the changes. Well, that was definitely something that was not just an exaggeration, but just downright wrong by some of the people that sent around a mailing. And as I mentioned, too, and it's just my opinion, remember, opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. If I express them, Diane Green's opinions are her opinions, and she was on earlier. But nonetheless, you know, who were elected? David Bozzi was the chairperson, but the other people elected were basically, most of them, are considered status quo, present administration, council member folks. Okay, they weren't there to rock the boat or even make waves except to, you know, maybe try to make the sailing a little smoother for our ship of the city. Is that too much of a metaphor for you? Okay, moving away from that. In terms of the recommendations for the school board, both papers chose the same people. They want to return Mr. Guido, and they suggested, even though he can only vote for two, only two out of the group of, I think, six whose names are there or more, they both recommend Mr. Berry and Ms. Petchlikoff, who was also on the Charter Commission, by the way, Ms. Petchlikoff, as the top contenders for the other seat. So, gee, you think that they could narrow that down for us? I mean, the paper is going to make recommendations. Well, why don't they just make recommendations? Why do they have to straddle the fence there? Okay, well. So where do they stand on the sale of the Dearborn Towers, though? In Florida, that building in Florida. Gee, I haven't seen a recommendation there. Unless I missed something, neither paper is taking a stand on that. Is it because it's too controversial? It's not because neither people at the papers are too uneducated, because they've, you know, reporters, they know politics from behind the scenes. That's, you know, they're around the council meetings and other seminars, and they see our elected representatives maybe even at their worst at times, and so they should be able to understand what's going on. And although I know that the editorial boards, as they're sometimes called, that is the group of people that manage the local papers, they get together, they try to talk among themselves and see if they can come to a consensus rather than just having the publisher or the editor choose the recommendations. They try to come to consensus. Sometimes if they can't come to that consensus, then they won't make a recommendation. But I think, you know, people have the right to differ, and I don't see why everybody has to be in agreement at the paper before they're going to be brave enough to do that. Of course, as reported in the Sunday Times, as it's called, that is the Times-Herald from last Sunday, October 28th, Mayor O'Reilly, John B. O'Reilly Jr. They've stopped calling him Mayor John B. O'Reilly, John B. Jack, in quotes, O'Reilly Jr. Because now we're getting serious, folks. Yeah. Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. proposed a sale to help ease the impact of city employees' post-retirement health benefits. They're expected to cost $10 million this fiscal year. And they think they can get from $7 to $8 million if they sell the place. So they're asking the people of Dearborn, democracy in action, whether or not they should proceed to try to get assessment of the value from realtors. And then if the value is close to what they think it should be, $7 to $8 million, that they will then try to sell it. Of course, will anybody buy it is another question. But that would give them most of the $10 million they need this year to pay for the post-retirement health benefits. So it means that health insurance for our current employees, they're going to be $10 million in the hole this year. You know how health costs are going up, folks, and that is because we have one of the most expensive and the worst designed systems in the world. Michael Moore's documentary feature, Sicko, if you didn't see it in the theaters, it is now out on DVD. You can buy it, rent it. You need to look at it. He is not talking about we should do it like Canada. Okay? He mentions Canada. He mentions France and Germany and other countries that have a healthcare system that is less costly to everybody, the government and the people, and equal in quality. And let me, so anyway, Mayor O'Reilly is in a little bit of differences of opinion with a lot of people in Dearborn. Last week we featured a lot of letters to the editors of both papers in Dearborn of people that didn't want the Dearborn Tower sold. Other people agree that with the mayor's logic. So it's interesting to see how that happens to work out. If it's not sold, where are we going to get the $10 million from? That's an interesting question. Nobody knows. Paul Krugman, though, and he is an editorial opinion writer for the New York Times and other papers. In today's paper, we mentioned the health care issue and the cost going up, and that's one reason that we've got to find, say, $10 million this year to pay for health costs for current Dearborn employees, who already have been reduced in size by 26%. Each of them had to go on a diet and lose 26% of their body weight. No, just joking, just joking. Well, this has to do with Rudy Giuliani, who was in Dearborn, again, 3 weeks ago in that debate. And he just made a statement about this. Now, Paul Krug is not just a politician, but economist. He knows numbers. And here's the quote. He starts his column today in New York Times on November 2nd with this. Rudy Giuliani said, quote, "My chance of surviving prostate cancer, and thank God I was cured of it in the United States, that chance is 82%. Okay, 82% success, that is, within 5 years after you were diagnosed, you're still alive. Okay, you haven't died from prostate cancer. Now, Giuliani said that in a new radio ad, attacking Democratic plans for universal health care. He went on to say, quote, and this is Giuliani, "My chances of surviving prostate cancer in England, only 44% under socialized medicine," unquote. Paul Krugman feels he has to point this out. Here's Paul Krugman. He says, "It would be a stunning comparison if it were true, but it isn't. And thereby hangs a tale, one of scare tactics, of the character of a man who would be president, and, I'm sorry to say, about what's wrong with political news coverage. Let's start with the facts. Mr. Giuliani's claim is wrong on multiple levels, bogus numbers wrapped in an invalid comparison embedded in a smear. Mr. Giuliani got his numbers from a recent article in City Journal, a publication of the conservative Manhattan Institute." You know, I've said in the past about think tanks that actually are set up not to think because they have a bias up front about what they should think, and they only hire people that happen to think that way in the first place. I think a think tank should be full of people that are willing to think of all kinds of ideas. Imagine somebody that is thoughtful, intelligent, and open-minded. Wow. But anyway, he got that number from the Conservative Manhattan Institute. Also, the author of the article in that publication from the Manhattan Institute gave no source for his numbers on five-year survival rates. Didn't give any numbers. Okay? And what Giuliani says is just wrong. Okay? So there were unsubstantiated numbers in the City Journal from the Manhattan Institute. No sources given. And the numbers, in fact, are wrong. And Krugman, Paul Krugman, looked them up. He says, you see, the actual survival rate in Britain is 74.4%. That still looks a bit lower than the U.S. rate, but the difference turns out to be mainly a statistical illusion. The details are technical, but the bottom line is that a man's chance of dying from prostate cancer is about the same in Britain as it is in America. So Mr. Giuliani's supposed killer statistic about the defects of socialized medicine, in quotes here, why I use that tone of voice, is entirely false, says Mr. Krugman. In fact, there's very little evidence that Americans get better health care than the British, which is amazing given the fact that Britain spends only 41% as much on health care per person as we do. Okay? So our system, there's no doubt about this, and the movie Sicko points this out. He talks about the people who are insured for health care in this country, who not only can't continue to afford it for much longer, but don't even get the service they need. Because there's only certain hospitals they go to, only certain amounts of treatments, and so a lot of things are disallowed, and then they disavow the original contract they made with you. So just because you have health care doesn't mean you're going to get care for your health. That's scary. That's why this was released on Tuesday before Halloween. It's a scary fact, folks. Our healthcare system is overexpensive, and it is not better in its care on whole, on total, than these other systems, which spend an awful lot less money, government money, personal money, to make them work. So, you know, our system, it doesn't matter if it's socialized or not. It should work for the benefit of the people. And do I have to mention? Yes, I will. 46 million people don't have any health care at all. No health care insurance. And out of 300 million people, that's about 15%. Especially a lot of them are children. Okay. Anyway, comparisons with Britain, says Mr. Krug, he goes on, have absolutely nothing to do with what the Democrats are proposing. In Britain, doctors are government employees. Despite what Mr. Giuliani is suggesting, none of the Democratic candidates have proposed to make American doctors work for the government. As a fact check in the Washington Post, they said, quote, the Clinton health care plan, this is Hillary Clinton, which is very similar to Edwards and Obama's plans, has more in common with the Massachusetts plan designed, signed into law by Governor Mitt Romney than the British national health system. Of course, this hasn't stopped Mr. Romney from making similar smears. At one level, what Mr. Giuliani and Mr. Romney are doing here is engaging in time-honored scare tactics. For generations, conservatives have denounced every attempt to ensure that Americans receive needed health care from Medicare to S-CHIP, as quote-unquote socialized medicine. Part of the strategy has always involved claiming that health reform is suspect because it's un-American and exaggerating health care problems in other countries, usually on the basis of unsubstantiated anecdotes or fraudulent statistics. Opponents of reform also make a practice of lumping all forms of government intervention together, pretending that having the government pay some health care bills is just the same as having the government take over the whole health care system. But here's what I don't understand. Again, Paul Krugman, he's an economist, a teacher, and I think it's Harvard, too, where he's at, a book writer, so he looks in depth at these things, as well as an editorial columnist for the New York Times. So he's not just spouting off here, folks. He's got information. He's got facts. And he knows how to look up the facts, too. Imagine. So here's what Mr. Krugman doesn't understand. Why isn't Mr. Giuliani's behavior here considered not just a case of bad policy analysis, but a character issue? For better or mostly for worse, political reporting is dominated by the search for the supposedly revealing incident in which the candidate says or does something that reveals his true character. And this incident surely seems to fit the bill. Leave aside the fact that Mr. Giuliani is simply lying about what the Democrats are proposing. After all, Mitt Romney is doing the same thing in Massachusetts. Okay? But health care is the preeminent domestic issue for the 2008 election, according to Mr. Krugman. Surely, and I think it is too, if we ever had the money for it, but we happen to be in this illegal, immoral, and inappropriate war in Iraq, and we're kind of stuck there now, aren't we? Nobody's got a good exit strategy, not even the president. So it would be easy to pay for any health care change, which would in fact be a better system that would save the country money and save individuals money and make our health better. Well, but health care is the preeminent issue, but how do we get money for a solution? How do we redirect the monies that we're spending now that largely isn't doing what we want it to do? I think that's the bigger question. Surely the American people deserve candidates who do their homework on the subject. Yet what we actually have is the front runner for the Republican nomination, apparently basing his health care views on something he read somewhere, which he believed without double checking, because it confirmed his prejudices. By rights then, Mr. Giuliani's false claims about prostate cancer, which he has, by the way, continued to repeat, along with some fresh false claims about breast cancer, should be a major political scandal. As far as Mr. Krugman can tell, he says these are not being treated that way by any reporter. To be fair, there has been some news coverage of the prostate affair, but it's only a tiny fraction of the coverage received by Hillary's laugh and John Edwards' haircut. And much of the coverage seems weirdly diffident. Memo to editors, if a candidate says something completely false, it is not, quote-unquote, in dispute. It's not the case that Democrats say they're not advocating British-style socialized medicine. They aren't. Look at the facts. When we're reporters, look at the facts. Don't try to fudge or hedge. Democrats say they aren't. They simply aren't. Look at what the issue is. And so Giuliani is lying. Or he's ignorant, and we don't want to say that, no. The fact is that the prostate affair is part of a pattern. Mr. Giuliani has a habit of saying things on issue that range from health care to national security that are demonstrably untrue. Or it's also pronounced demonstrably untrue. And the American people have a right to know that. So that's why I tell you, okay? Careful about political reporting. Never trust anybody who talks on the air. Get other information from other sources, more in-depth sources. Hope I've challenged you to do that a little more than what you might already be doing. Okay. Frank Bewick, in his column, Sunday Times, October 28th, suggests that he thinks privatizing Social Security is a good idea. So just Social Security, that was raised by Fred Thompson last week. They had to come up with something new to talk about in all these ridiculous intra-party debates among the presidential candidates. Of course, in 20 years, the Social Security system will be not able to pay out the checks because so many people are starting to retire each year because of the baby boom after World War II. Soldiers come home. After 4 years of fighting, they start loving. Amazing. And they had a lot of loving to do, I guess, because the increase in population was significant. And those people are now turning 62 in next year. 46 to 2008. And so there's going to be huge numbers of people taking Social Security starting next year, and it's going to be increasing after that. And who's going to pay for it? Well, that's a question. Privatizing, interesting idea. Maybe we'll explore that with you. The people that don't know how to invest, going to be in a lot of trouble. If the market has a downturn and some people have their money in stocks, they're in a lot of trouble. Do we need a social safety net for the public? I think so. I found out after working for more than 40 years that if I retire next year and I'm able to, I will get a big whopping $1,600 a month $1,600 a month. Couldn't even afford a good apartment in Dearborn, much less food, clothing, anything else for that. I mean, good, really good, okay. But I mean, most people do pay $800 to $1,000 a month for an apartment, if not for a house. And so if you're not saving on your own right now, folks, if you don't have annuities and other investments and cash, you can't afford to retire. Social Security, ha! So I'd like to see a plan in place or information given to people that will actually give them money to retire on if they want to retire. We don't even have that system now. Social Security is not enough money even right now to live on by itself. I mean, it's way below the poverty level. I don't think you'd have to be homeless living on $1,600 a month, but almost. What is that each year? Is it $15,000? $15,000 a year? That's not enough to live on. I mean, where can you live for that? What kind of food can you eat? Can you own a car and pay the insurance on that? Can you pay for health insurance when you take it out of the $1,600 a month? No, you can't. So no one can survive on Social Security alone right now, Frank, Mr. Bewick. That's obvious. It's just not enough money by itself for anybody right now. So if we did away with all of it, well, that would hurt because it's probably, for most people, even those who have been saving, and it's probably about 20% to a third, hope it's not half, of what they have available to retire on. But that's essential. That's a big chunk, 20%, 30% of your total income per month. You can't just give up on that. So the federal system is a good one. There are some things yours truly doesn't believe in government doing more than it has to do. Especially, it shouldn't go to wars that have no good reason. Okay, I mean, that should be obvious. People lied to us about that, and you know who. And they're still lying about it. But read the books, folks. Read the books. Plenty of books about the Iraq War out now by people who were there. Democrats, Republicans, former warriors, soldiers. Plenty of them. They got the facts. No weapons of mass destruction, no Al-Qaeda, no Osama bin Laden. Okay? And the situation after $600 billion is worse over there in that country now than it was under Saddam. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Okay? Situation is worse than under Saddam for the people of that country as well as for us. And the oil flow and so on, too. Too bad, right? Hey, good intentions. Yeah, well, you know what they say about the road of good intentions? The road of good intentions, road is paved with good intentions, but it is the road to hell. Can I say this on the air? The road to hell. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. You need smarts. You need education. Okay? You can't make guesses. You can't use political philosophy by itself to make decisions. Okay, you have to look at the facts of what's happening in the real world. In other words, what about that Iraqi culture? What about the different ethnic groups? Would they fight each other if it wasn't Saddam holding them together? Would there start a civil war? People that knew Iraqi culture, who weren't biased or paid off, you know, the experts on Iraqi history, they knew this. They knew what would happen when a war would start and you take away all government, a civil war. Nobody listened to them, did they? Because they knew too much, right? You know, don't let the facts get in the way of your fantasies, right? Oh. So we'll come back to healthcare, and you need to see the movie Sicko, I think. You need to talk to your friends about what they're going to do and how to influence these political candidates, okay? We've got only 7 minutes to go. It's 10:57. Got 3 minutes to go here. The Times Herald newspaper, and we'll sum this up and get out of here because big band music and more is going to be coming up at 11 with Professor White. The professor, Mr. White, is going to be here until 2 o'clock today. And that's going to be an exciting time. In this election, the Times-Herald newspaper board, they do recommend a no vote on the Dearborn Towers proposal. Again, I have not seen a position from the Press and Guide on the Dearborn Towers proposed selling of the towers. Okay? But they say no on that. That if we need money, we shouldn't sell something that's breaking even. We should find a way to deal with it. And I don't know what that would be, but, you know, cut services. Everybody talk to in Dearborn, they don't want their services cut. They want their trash, their recycling, they want their snow removal. Detroit doesn't have snow removal, I don't believe. They hardly ever shovel any Detroit residential streets, I understand. So if we want to have fewer services, you know, city government can accommodate. That's how they make it up. But so where you stand on that is up to you. I don't think it's a big issue one way or the other, but it is $10 million that somebody's going to have to find. And over in Dearborn Heights, they recommend Elizabeth Aegis, Kenneth Barron, and Robert Brown. Now, we interviewed other candidates for that office, and what's interesting is that they don't give any reasons why they favor these people. You know, is it character, personality? I mean, okay, he's a WHFR staff member. But one of the candidates for office over there in Dearborn Heights has a master's degree in city planning. He's a semi-retired architect that actually has the knowledge to make decisions for the cities. And he didn't get a mention at all. I wonder why. I don't know. That's it. That's all the time we have today for the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Diane Green from Henry Ford Community College for coming by. And we want to end with our theme. Let's keep shaking things up out there. This is WHFR Dearborn.